Legislating JobKeeper 2.0 and the brawling over border closures will take centre stage when a new-look parliament gets underway today for the next 2 weeks. The government will use new Treasury data forecasting an effective unemployment rate of 13% to pump up the pressure on the states to reopen their borders and economies where possible. But a major distraction has exploded for the Liberal Party with branch-stacking allegations in Victoria that seems to have ensnared two federal MPs, one of them a minister. Matthias Cormann is Minister for Finance and Government Leader in the Senate. Matthias Cormann, welcome back to Breakfast.
And good to be back.
Minister, a series of allegations have been made about the Victorian Liberal Party last night on in the Nine media. Widespread branch stacking, threats to end political careers, taxpayer-funded jobs given to political operatives. Two federal MPs, Michael Sukkar and Kevin Andrews, have been linked to this scandal, as it's been reported. Is it enough for the Prime Minister to simply say, quote, this is an organisational matter for the Victorian division of the party to sort out?
Well, it is an organisational matter for the Victorian branch of the Liberal Party. I mean, you know, they are in the best position to assess, you know, what's what and deal with it.
Yeah, but when this happened to Labor, similar allegations, the Prime Minister was all over it. He said the Labor Party was at war with itself. He said, quote, Anthony Albanese is leading a party in absolute chaos and disarray. Doesn't this report show the Liberals are just as bad?
Well, I don't necessarily accept that characterisation, but, you know, these are matters for the Liberal Party organisation.
That's not a characterisation, sure that was a quote.
Sorry?
But that wasn't a characterisation, that is what the Prime Minister said at the time.
I agree with what the Prime Minister said. I don't agree with your characterisation of it.
Well, all I was saying was the Prime Minister at the time leapt on that. Is it enough then for this to simply be an organisation matter for the Victorian Liberal Party?
Well, I don't necessarily agree that, you know, what was reported were the same things. But, I mean, you're of course entitled to make your observations from where I sit. I mean, these seem to me to be organisational matters for the Liberal Party in Victoria.
Let's go to some of the allegations as we saw them last night or read them this morning. The most serious one seems, which did involve two federal MPs, is a 2018 memo from power broker Marcus Bastion, which sets out a plan to give taxpayer-funded electoral office jobs to political operatives involved in branch stacking. Now, Michael Sukkar, who's a federal minister, seemingly endorsed the memo, saying it was good summary. Corruption expert Geoffrey Watson, SC, says there's prima facie evidence of the misuse of taxpayers' money. Michael Sukkar rejects the allegations, but should he stand aside as a Minister of the Crown until this is investigated?
Look, I'm not, you know, obviously a law enforcement authority. You know, I'm not aware of what the status of whatever memo is. You know, if there are allegations of inappropriate use of taxpayer resources, then obviously that is a matter that ought to be investigated independently by the Department of Finance at arm's length from the government, as is usual practice in the context of these sorts of allegations.
And Kevin Andrews has tweeted this morning the allegations are false and he's referred these matters to the finance department. So your department will investigate?
Well, I mean, that is what happens in these sorts of circumstances. When allegations of this nature are made of inappropriate use of taxpayer resources in the context of parliamentary work, then in the first instance, it's a matter that the Department of Finance investigates independently at arm's length from the government. And that's what I would expect to happen in this circumstance.
You're listening to RN Breakfast. Our guest is the Finance Minister, Matthias Cormann. Matthias Cormann, effective unemployment is set to shoot up to more than 13%. These are the figures from Treasury overnight. You've said the border closures are causing economic damage. What would that figure be if the borders were open? Can we say that?
Well, look, you know, the numbers are as they've been released. I mean, these are forecasts, and these are you know, obviously forecasts and projections by Treasury at a time when things continue to evolve quite rapidly. When we were on a good trajectory in June and early July, until of course we experienced that significant outbreak out of Victoria, a significant number of jobs has been restored in the period, you know, since the peak of the effective unemployment rate of 14.9% back in April, which went down to about 9.9%, or 689,000 effective jobs restored in the economy. But of course, you know, the events in Victoria have been, you know, very unhelpful when it comes to the economic recovery.
And the events in Victoria have prompted these border closures. The Prime Minister tried and failed on Friday to strong-arm the premiers into lifting some of those border restrictions, but failed, it would seem. Who's in charge here when it comes to the borders? The Prime Minister's not in charge, is he? I mean, that's the simple rule.
I'm not, Well, I'm not sure that the events in Victoria caused the state border closures. I mean, many of the states had state border closures in place since early April.
But some have closed, slammed shut again, haven't they, since then?
Indeed. But, in the end, what we need to get the Australian economy into a position where things, with the existence of the virus still with us, can operate as COVID safely as possible. I mean, when you've got a crisis response, of course, things like state border closures can be an important part of managing the risk in the context of a crisis. But moving forward and accepting the fact that the virus is likely to be with us and the risk and the threat of the virus is likely to be with us for a long time, we need to find ways to minimize the risk of new infections to the best of our ability, to make sure that we can respond to any localized outbreaks as swiftly as possible, and to facilitate the reopening of economic activity as much as possible. I mean, in the end, we've got to ensure we've got the processes and procedures in place to absolutely minimize the risk of new infections as much as we can.
But how do we do this if the states won't play ball and the federal government doesn't have the Prime Minister doesn't have the capacity to order the states to open up? I mean, National Cabinet, which includes all the state and territory leaders, did agree to come up with a formal definition of a COVID virus hotspot based on medical advice, but the states can ignore it if they choose and keep their borders shut. Would you expect your home state of WA, which has been shut off to every state and territory now for some time, to open up the borders if states do not match that definition of a COVID hotspot?
Well, what I would expect is that all states and territories work together positively and constructively to ensure that we completely and utterly remain on top of the virus, but also do everything we can to maximise the strength of the economic recovery as we move out of this pandemic crisis situation.
Is that how you describe how the states are behaving at the moment, positively and constructively?
Well, there is a lot of goodwill, but there's also, of course, a lot of concern. And, this is an ongoing process. I mean, these things are not dealt with from one day to the next. I mean, this is going to take some time to work these things through.
And it's very popular. The closure is very popular in your home state of WA and in Queensland and in some of these other states. So you can understand why the premiers are keeping them shut. But do you speak to the WA premier? Do you have a sense that they're looking at opening it up at all?
Look, in the end, it's not a matter of opening up in a reckless and irresponsible fashion. It is opening it up once we've got all of the processes and systems in place to ensure that across workplaces all around Australia, things are managed in a COVID-safe fashion. I mean, in the end, you say it's popular. Well, it's not popular with those people who are not able to get back to work and earn a living to look after their families because they're not able to do their job.
The main piece of legislation before Parliament today will be changes to JobKeeper. Labor has toughened up its position. It doesn't want the wage subsidy to be scaled back at the end of September because that'll rip about $40 billion from the economy. You yourself have spoken recently about the need to, quote, be flexible when it comes to a rapidly evolving and fluid situation. Economic conditions have deteriorated since you announced the changes, and we were just discussing that on unemployment. Does Labor have a point that this wage subsidy needs to be kept in place now?
Well, the wage subsidy is being
at its
kept
current
in place,
level.
But no. I mean, we need to ensure, we need to transition out of this historically unprecedented crisis-level fiscal support back into a new normal situation. And we're doing that sensibly over a six-month period. So the $1,500 JobKeeper payment level will continue until the end of September. Then it'll reduce down to $1,200. And that is just a subsidy towards the wage. Until the end of December, and then from the beginning of January till the end of March,
sure.
It continues at
$1,000. Yeah, but Labor says now, you shouldn't drop it at this point and take all that stimulus out of the economy, which is struggling.
Well, in the end, we've got to get back to a situation where profitable, viable and profitable businesses pay for the wages of their employees out of their income, not on the basis of taxpayer support. We're going to have to let the economy adjust to the new normal. I mean, we've got to find out which businesses are going to be genuinely viable and profitable moving forward and able to pay for the wages of real jobs. I mean, we can't just keep this going for years on end on the basis of taxpayer-funded support.
At the moment, we've got a long list of companies, about a third of listed companies receiving JobKeeper, but who are also reporting higher profits. Solomon Lew's Premier Investments, Adairs, Domino Pizza, the list is quite long. If these companies are profitable, why can't they be paying their own staff without putting their hand out for wage subsidies? If they're profitable, is that a rule under the new regime for being kicked off JobKeeper?
Well, you're just supporting my point. I mean, clearly when we announced this, when we announced the JobKeeper program at the end of March, it was an immediate crisis response and providing support into the economy, making sure that we protected as many employees as possible, keeping them connected to their employers. And once the business qualified, because their turnover dropped by 30 or 50%, depending on their income threshold, they were in for the full 6-month period. Now, of course, the businesses will have to be reassessed, and these judgments on whether or not they should continue to qualify will be made. And businesses that can pay for the wages of their employees out of their income rather than rely on taxpayer support should, of course, do so. Of course, that should be the case.
So if they're profitable, you wouldn't get JobKeeper in the future?
The test is a turnover test. The test is, it goes whether your turnover has fallen by 30% or 50%, depending on what your income is compared to a relevant period. That's the test.
Also up for debate today, extending the workplace exemptions that's been bolted onto this JobKeeper bill. Companies will still be allowed to vary a worker's hours and duties without breaching the Fair Work Act, but only if they haven't fully recovered from the pandemic impact. That's the rider. How many firms that lose JobKeeper but haven't yet fully recovered will be eligible for the ongoing workplace exemptions?
Look, I can't put a number on that for you. I mean, but clearly a lot of businesses, even though they no longer qualify for JobKeeper, will still find themselves in a challenging situation. And we want to make it as easy as possible for them as they recover from this crisis to hold on to as many of their employees as possible. And, Christian Porter, as the Minister for Industrial Relations, has been working this through with the ICTU. And indeed, those conversations have been reflected in the designing of what is going to go to the Parliament this fortnight. Those conversations are continuing, and we've approached this in a very constructive fashion. But ultimately, in particular, as we transition businesses off this taxpayer-funded support back into a new normal, they will continue to need some support through this transition, and making sure that we maintain a level of flexibility in workplace relations arrangements through this transition is going to be important.
Matthias Cormann, thanks very much for joining us.
Always good to talk to you.
Matthias Cormann is the Finance Minister and Leader of the Government in the Senate.